Welcome to Rocket Talent, a podcast dedicated to helping you, the tech professional, learn from real-world discussions with notable leaders in the product management, data science, and engineering space. I am your host, Jonathan Spies. Thanks for tuning in. We continue our very exciting series around what it is like to become an engineering manager and real-world tips from leading engineering heads. On today's show, we have the chance to interview John Pavley, the SVP of Engineering at Viacom, and share great insight from John around leadership and growth. Today, I am super excited as we've started to talk about management and, as an engineer, potential ways that your career can grow. And I am honored to be with John Pavley, the current head of SVP of Engineering here at Viacom. We're live here at Viacom, so thank you for letting us use your space. John is kind of, in my opinion, a legend in the space. He has a lot of wisdom that he can share and a lot of value to bring to you today. He started off his career early working at Apple. Prior, he's a New York tri-state area, New Jersey tri-state area, kind of local. Went to Rutgers University.
That's right.
And worked at DoubleClick in the early 2000s. Was even behind LimeWire, the sharing service, and worked at the famous Huffington Post.
And Spotify.
And Spotify, and now we're here at Viacom.
That's right.
And worn a lot of different hats, from product to engineering manager to design to kind of fascinating around different emojis that are going to take off.
Yeah, but very excited about emojis. I think they're going to be big. So I would invest in them.
I couldn't agree more. I remember when that. Anyway, so me and John kind of crossed paths a few years ago where I got a chance to work with him at the Huffington Post and immediately kind of just absorbed his knowledge of how he thinks about management, how he thinks about growing talent. And, you know, even though I wasn't an engineer, I was inspired, right? Because I speak to so many engineers on a daily basis that I felt like lacked that type of advice. And John just, you know, people that I met that were working for him followed him from one company to another. And that's rare to see in this industry. So, and without further ado, I'd kind of love to introduce John and obviously have a number of different questions for you. The kind of first question I would ask is, you've kind of been there, worn a lot of different hats, but management is this concept that you need to be doing management by like authority. And so maybe you can give some guidance around, you're a young engineer, you think you want to go into management. What are things that you can start doing to flex those types of muscles and see if this is even something you want to get into?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Unfortunately, the way a lot of companies are set up, it seems to be the only way to advance your career is to go into management, is to become a manager. And that might not be for you. That might not be the best use of your talents. And luckily, a lot of tech companies also have this idea of the individual contributor ladder. So you can grow as an individual contributor all the way to the VP level, SVP level as a senior architect, principal architect. But let's talk about management. You know, management isn't really all about direct control. It just seems that way. And I like to use the example of Captain Kirk and Captain Picard from Star Trek. Captain Kirk was the old school Star Trek captain, and he seemed to have to do everything himself. Like, I don't know why there was a crew, because he had to beam down to the planet personally and negotiate with the people on the planet. He had to disarm them. He had to cure the disease. He had to fight the Klingons, right? Whereas Captain Picard had a cabinet. He had a group of trusted advisors. He had people he could delegate to, and he managed by influence. And he's really what modern management is about. It's not about you solving the problem as a manager. It's about you working with your team to solve the problem. And you can start that today. You don't have to be officially the manager. But what you can do is you can help your teammates solve problems. You can collaborate more deeply. And you can, instead of like working off on your own on a problem, you can bring people in and work on it together. And that's when upper management's going to notice you. They're going to see, at Apple, we had a concept of dividers and multipliers. And so when you bring somebody on the team and they're just really lost and they're asking a lot of questions and they don't like to work with people and everything has to be their way and they're very picky, that's a divider. It slows everybody down.
Right.
But when you bring somebody on the team and they're helping other people, they're answering questions, they're able to get not only get their work done, but help other people get work done, that's a multiplier. It's like you added two or three people to the team.
Right.
And that's the first sign that you have a manager on your hands, a potential manager.
Right. What about, you know, so you talked a little bit about influencing, right? Engineers by nature, not every engineer is the best communicator, right?
Right, yes.
They're wired a little bit differently. Some are. I feel like many, that's something that they have to work on. And the kind of communication style or how they come off to individuals is a new kind of arena for them to explore. So, you know, any books or kind of just paths that you would give someone around, like, start influencing and communication skills?
Yeah, when I joined Apple Computer, they gave me a couple of books, and one of them was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Okay.
And I said to my boss at the time, I don't need this book. I'm highly effective. I got a job at Apple. How could I be any more better? But eventually I read the book and I realized there's a lot of good advice. And, you know, this is one of those classic books, right? And there's many of them. How to Win Friends and Influence People is another one. And you kind of think of them as cliches or they're books for salespeople.
Right.
But as you know, as a recruiter, the people skills are really important. There's no real job anywhere, maybe where you're working on an assembly line or something. Mm-hmm. But of course, robots are going to do that. But we need to build up our people skills. And I think you might start out where you don't have a lot of confidence in your people skills. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not a native English speaker. I can barely speak English, to tell you the truth. I was always more comfortable typing on the screen than I am speaking. If you look at the early presentations that I gave at the WWDC back in the day in the 90s, it's so embarrassing. Like, I'm not putting that on YouTube. It's horrible. Yeah. But through practice and by study, you can get much better. And I feel like that's something that all leaders need to do. We need to become great storytellers.
Right.
Because that's how you encourage people to work with you, because you come to them with a coherent story and they want to be part of that. And there's a, you know, to be honest with you, I love to watch movies, not just because I like science fiction and robots, but I also like to learn about the art of storytelling. And, you know, that's what's, for example, great about working at a company like Viacom. We have a lot of great storytellers here. Take somebody out to lunch who's a great communicator, somebody who you admire, and just observe them. How do they work? How do they use their hands? How do they look people in the eye and make that direct eye contact? How do they phrase things? So you need to do work probably, but it's really, it pays off. A manager isn't somebody who barks orders at people.
Right.
Right.
I think it's important to recognize too that, you know, as you start getting into influencing and, you know, trying to push initiatives potentially across your organization, it goes down to relationships, right? And you might be new to the team, and obviously, you know, rule number one is don't go in and try to change everything, and it takes time to kind of prove yourself and
right.
build rapport, right, and build those relationships and understand, you know, who are the teams that I'm going to be interacting with and kind of building that up, because eventually if you like someone, you're going to want to work with that person, right? And there's like the kind of untold intangibles where if you're working with a jerk, who wants to work with a jerk, right? No matter
what. Right.
Even if you have to.
The brilliant jerk that Netflix so famously coined, right? So we all know them. They're absolutely brilliant engineers, but they have terrible people skills and they create drama on the team. And first of all, you don't want to be the brilliant jerk.
Right.
And then secondly, you want to help the brilliant jerk, right? You want to coach people like that. And hopefully you can. Sometimes you can't, but you want to work with people so they understand there's software engineering is a team sport. I like to think of it like soccer.
Right.
I coached soccer when my children were young, and I really gained an appreciation for the sport because there's no star on the soccer team because everybody has to work together to get that ball into the goal. And so at certain times, people take over. Like the goalie has to block, but as soon as the goalie's done his or her job, another player has to grab that ball, and you have to work flexibly, like a web, helping each other out, picking up the ball when somebody else kicks it somewhere. And also, you have to help people when they make mistakes. You have to help, the team has to help recover. So a good manager is not grabbing the ball and trying to shoot it into the goal him or herself. A good manager is looking at the whole team, looking for the strengths and the weaknesses, and then helping to make sure that the team is successful as opposed to the individuals are successful. And that's another sign to upper management that you're manager material. When you start worrying about the team performance or the company performance, and you're not as worried about your performance or your team, your individual, like this person is a great person, we should give that person a promotion, but it's more like, this is a great team, can we do a team bonus? Right. That's like a signal, this person is starting to think big picture.
Right. Help us understand, or kind of, you know, where was it that point in your career, right? Like, you were at Apple, of course, they start giving you some books on management. There's 1,000 books, right?
And right.
Another topic. But where were you like, I think I might have something for this? And how did you kind of explore that? And what tips would you give others to get there?
Sure. I went on a journey, sort of an odyssey, because when I was at Apple, I felt like there are a lot of problems with engineering management, that things could be a lot more efficient. And I realized that the thing that I could contribute was more effectiveness to the team. And, you know, I think everybody has sort of their role in life, and you have to find it. You have to understand your limitations, mm-hmm. but you also, you know, you can't beat yourself up all the time. You also have to understand your strengths. And what I discovered was that I really loved engineers. I loved the way engineers think. I loved the way they worked. I loved the code. I loved the whole culture of engineering. But sometimes there are even at companies like Apple or DoubleClick or even at Spotify, there's going to be things that need to be optimized for the engineer to make a better environment for the engineer. And that's what I try. As I move from each company, I try to, on this odyssey, this journey, I pick up a few pointers, a few ideas, right. and I try to apply it. And so I've read a lot of books on management. I've read the Peter Drucker books, for example. Mm-hmm. I've taken a lot of classes. Sometimes the classes are given by the company, sometimes on my own. I've taken classes at Stanford. I've taken classes on situational leadership. And so over time, I've gotten a lot of tools in my tool belt, and I can now, here at Viacom, I can work with my team members, my managers, and my individual contributors and say, here's a tool that can help you.
Sure.
Or here's a book. In fact, we have a little book club going on where we share books that we're reading, and sometimes they're pretty far afield. They're not management books per se,
sure.
but they're more books about ideas. Like recently, we've all been reading this book called Sapiens.
Okay.
And it's a book about just how human beings work, how we've gone from small tribes to giant nations, and the sort of the whole sweep of human history and the impact of technology. You know, agriculture is a technology. Computers are a technology. And down the road, we're going to have self-driving cars. So it changes the way people relate to each other. And as engineers, that's our fault, right? We made that happen. We have
right.
to take responsibility for that. And I think certain companies like Uber and Apple and Google are beginning to find out that they have to take responsibility. They can't just build the technology. You know, Facebook can't just throw it out there and not impact an election. Not
right.
impact the way society works. So as managers, what we want to do is make sure that our employees are thinking about the big picture and that we're solving problems in a way that don't just optimize for one thing.
Sure. What about your journey, right? Like, you've been there, you probably have some tips to others on... not even just how to get there, what not to do.
Right.
You're officially now like a manager, or you're starting to manage, starting to lead a team. And I feel like there's so many kind of mistakes here. Like, if I knew that X amount of years ago,
I'm glad you asked that question, because you hit a dry spell. I think everybody does. I felt like I very rapidly kind of moved up the ladder and got to director. And then I was stuck at director for 10 years. And I made a lot of mistakes. And first of all, it doesn't do much good to whine about it. I was whining a lot. So I was an engineering director for many, many years, and go to my boss, whoever was my boss at the time, and say, this isn't fair. I've been doing this for 3 years. And then it was 5 years. Then it was 6 years. Why am I not a VP? Joe over there is a VP. Jill was made VP after 1 year. Why am I not? That didn't help. Don't whine. Don't do that. Promotions are not handed out based on years of experience, right? And also don't look external. Don't blame the external situation. Now, sometimes, yeah, you know, if you're in a situation where there's belt tightening, there's not going to maybe be a lot of opportunities for promotion. But even there, good management, to tell you the truth, is really hard to find. I look back on it now, and I realize that if I had been more focused on some of the things we were talking about earlier, helping the whole team, looking at the big picture, mm-hmm. like one of the things that I ask my engineers today and my engineering managers to do today is think about operating costs. Don't just optimize for the fastest web page or the fastest mobile app. Also think about, well, how expensive is it to maintain this?
Right.
Right? And this is, as engineers, we don't like to talk about budgets, right? But as engineering managers, we really have to think, okay, this is going to cost $1 million a year to operate this software.
Sure.
This is a service that I've built out in the Amazon cloud. How can I do this in a more cost-effective way? When I was at Spotify, we had 20 million songs to serve to people to stream, but nobody's going to pay more money, right? They're going to pay 10 bucks a month or sure. whatever it is, the flat price. So part of the secret sauce wasn't just performance and speed and accuracy and creating a machine learning system to recommend songs. Part of it was being cost effective.
Sure.
And I think once I got that, once I figured out that I needed to look at the big picture, I needed to stop whining, I needed to work on myself.
Sure.
I needed to learn how to tell stories. I needed to be a real leader as opposed to a taskmaster.
Sure.
That's when all of a sudden I became a VP. So it's interesting. I quickly moved up to the director level at Apple, and it wouldn't be until I was at DoubleClick that I became an engineering VP, and it was during a downtime. It was in the worst possible circumstances, after the dot-com bubble bust, after 9/11. So it's 2001, the world's going to hell, and DoubleClick's going through a hard time. We had to lay off 50% of our employees. But because I had started to think about the big picture and focus on DoubleClick as a whole and our revenue and helping employees improve around me, even if they didn't report to me.
Sure.
They promoted me to right. VP. And I didn't even realize. I was like, what did I do?
Right.
Like, I went from focusing on myself to focusing on the team. So I wasn't even sure what I did right.
A lot of the things that you're kind of talking about, if you take a step back, like those are not easy things to come to terms with, right?
Right.
You know, you spend 10 years and it's almost like, obviously you have to have a very, you have to be very perceptive, very self-aware, right? And, you know, it could be, none of us are perfect, right? And that's
yeah.
not like necessarily an easy thing to come to terms with, like, oh, I have to make improvements, right? So some of that is like, when you say it on a high level or theoretical level, it can be hard to understand. And so
right.
what did you do where obviously you hear about small improvements to kind of be honest with yourself, like, all right, here are the 10 things high level that I should be working on. Obviously you can't work on 10 things at once because you're going to do 10 things really poorly, or maybe you could, you know, if you're
right. Well,
so what did you do to kind of like check, you know, kind of have check-ins with yourself or hold yourself accountable
yeah.
to be like, you know, making progress here?
You're so right. You have to be self-aware. I think I should have said that much earlier up front. I was not self-aware for a very long time. I thought I was pretty smart. I thought I was pretty cool because I had all these great companies on my resume. I'd done all this cool stuff.
Right.
And I had to back off. In order to move forward, I had to actually kind of look backwards, and I had to realize that, you know, actually, I don't have all the answers. I needed to start listening to the people around me. And I find that I learn from anyone. A lot of times when I meet with a junior manager, I actually learn from them things that I hadn't thought about.
Right.
So I've really opened my eyes and my ears to what anybody I'm with, what is their perspective? What is working for them? And you do have to be hard on yourself. You do have to hold yourself accountable. The proof is in the pudding. If people are not knocking on your door and handing you a promotion, you could say, well, they're just ignoring me. They don't understand me. Or maybe you're not making yourself understandable. So I realized I also had to change my demeanor. There was a time in my history where I used to wear all black. I did it because Steve Jobs wore all black, right? So I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm a cool guy. I'm going to wear all black. And I realized that doesn't make me very approachable. That doesn't really help people get to know me.
Right.
And another thing I realized, you might not think of it now because I probably sound like a pretty approachable person, but I was very abrupt with people. There was a long time I couldn't figure out how to make small talk, how to put people at ease. And so people didn't know how to handle me. I wouldn't let down the barrier, right? So I had to learn to do that. And one of the things I would do is I would record myself. Sounds silly, but this is great. You have this computer, you have your phone.
Right.
Record yourself. I still, to this day, my wife thinks I'm insane. I'll sit in the basement on the weekend and I'll record myself giving a presentation. It sounds very vain, but I do it not because I loved it. I don't release these things.
Right.
Sometimes I actually do have a couple of things on YouTube, but because they're educational. But I do this because I want to hear what I sound like. Am I saying a lot? Do I feel like it's a dramatic event when I'm speaking, or does it sound kind of dry and toneless?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds silly, like it's a little embarrassing to admit it, but it really works.
Yeah. Actually, when I was a senior in college, I went to business school at Binghamton University. Everyone was like, you have to get a job. And so I had all these interviews
yes,
lined
you
up
to get a job.
Right. And, you know, you're young, you don't know anything about interviewing. I remember going to like the career counselor and the school of management and then, you know, just like practicing all these silly questions that you know you're going to get. Right. And here I am thinking I'm a good speaker or that this stuff kind of comes simply to me. But you have no idea what you actually look like, what you sound like, what words you're emphasizing, your pitch, right. Your tone. And so I remember for like hours one evening, just literally locking myself in my room and doing this with like my computer, or I think I had some like old school recorder, and I would do it over and over again. And then finally it came to a point where I was actually too rehearsed.
Right.
That it was just like obvious that I sounded like I spent hours in a room. And so I had to like kind of deconstruct
yeah,
it and
you have
focus
to find
on
the balance.
Exactly.
You don't want to come across as like a professional announcer.
Exactly.
Unless yeah. That's what you are.
But yeah, no, it's funny. And you know, sometimes even with like starting to go through management and you want a great way to kind of take initiative is focus on a random, maybe not a random, but like a new technology or subsect of topic that your organization is going through, right? That nobody really has the time, make it a little side project and then give a presentation
yes.
To the team on it. You're not necessarily managing others, but you can kind of take the initiative and teach others. And before you know it, you're kind of seen within your organization as like an SME, and it shows that you have the initiative and it can go into more and more.
Yeah, you can't really lead people if they won't follow you.
Right.
And people aren't going to follow you unless they feel that there's an honesty there, that there's an expertise there.
Mm-hmm.
We have this interesting problem in technology that sometimes there are non-technical people leading very technical engineers, and engineers can spot a non-technical manager a mile away.
Sure.
And so I think your advice is really good. It's the same advice that I give. Pick a topic and teach it.
Right.
In fact, one of the things that we're doing here at Viacom is we're working with Girls Who Code and Script Ed, and we hold the classes here in the building, and our engineers volunteer to mentor and teach the students. And I think that is great manager training. Because if you can teach something, you have the communication skills
right.
to lead.
Right. Wow, that's interesting.
Especially like a high school kid.
Right. And it's just like, it's a great way to practice. The stakes are low. I mean, they're high, but...
Yeah. And a lot of management is teaching.
Right.
Right? A lot of management... Because what you want to do is you don't want to have to micromanage and
right.
tell your engineers exactly what to do. That's not good. What you want to do is it's like that teach a person to fish, right? Instead of giving them the fish.
Right.
You want to help them learn how to manage themselves.
Sure. The last question I ask is, one of the common things I hear young engineering leads or managers deal with is whether they're at a startup and they're kind of strapped for resources, or they're even at a bigger company, right? It's a growing team and it's still a small team. And so you're kind of caught in this in-between phase where you're still expected to produce as an engineer, right. But you need to also take a step back and code, right? And any guidance that you can give on kind of managing that and how eventually you get away from it, just that kind of transitional period, because oftentimes it's so easy to get caught in the weeds. And I've seen, you know, really smart, brilliant engineering leads that they never walk away, right? And then it ends up hindering their growth.
Yeah. I'll give you an example of how not to do it. I don't want to say where it was, but when I was an engineer early days, we had a manager who would come in and he kind of manage us during the day. And then we would go home, right? And he would stay late into the night writing code and rewriting our code. And we'd come in the morning to this big mess, right? Just terrible. And so the day was actually spent kind of like going through this massive code he wrote and refactoring it and trying to figure out what was going on. And it was tough because it was the boss's code. Mm-hmm. And so he thought he was a lot smarter and mm-hmm. a lot better coder than he was. So that's not how you want to do it. You want to be a player coach. And a player coach is somebody who's sort of a veteran. They're out there on the field. You know, you were a coder. You were an engineer. Now you're a manager. And so you can play a position on the team if you need to, but what your main job is coaching, and that involves delegation. You have to know when to delegate and let people, you know, work on their own and maybe even fail and be able to criticize constructively, right? You know, like, what is the one thing we engineers all fear is the code review, but it's also the thing that we crave because that's the time we get that feedback that mm-hmm. we need to get to improve our code. That's why I like ideas like pair programming. It's always hard to get engineers to do it, but it's sort of a non-confrontational code review, mm-hmm. sort of an always-on code review. And as a manager, you need to figure out how to delegate at the right level. If you over-delegate, the engineers will be lost. I've, in the past, made mistakes where I've said to, like, an intern, just go figure it out, mm-hmm. right? And the poor person is just wandering the halls trying sure. to figure it out, versus accomplished engineer where you give them a to-do list. Like, here's how I want you, here's the schema, you know, this is how I want you to do it. So you have to learn how to properly apply. It's really what they call situational leadership. Sometimes you're persuading, sometimes you're listening, sometimes you're telling, right? And it depends on the situation. And that's how you're a player coach. You are not the star of the team. You are not the person who gets all the awards.
Right.
You're the person who helps other people get awards. That's right. A true manager.
Yeah. That's really helpful. So one thing I just kind of want to highlight on, you've been in this space for some time, and you've always kind of been at more modern, progressive organizations, right? And, you know, there's certain organizations like the Spotify's that you've worked with, where they kind of implement like this butterfly or OKR infrastructure where, you know, you start to talk about taking an impact in what the company is doing, right?
Right.
And understanding
right.
the business. Because if you take the kind of the mindset of like, I just want to solve problems, you're never going to really truly grow in your career, right? And if you don't understand like the big picture. And so you have things like OKRs and butterfly where they're putting teams together that are designed to making business impact. You have other organizations, not to name, where the engineers are just kind of seen as an ends to a means and just like build this, and they don't really...
They don't understand what they're building.
They don't understand what they're building,
right.
And that's not necessarily their fault. So it's 2017. Hopefully everyone gets a chance to work at a more modern, business-oriented...
More enlightened
organization, right? So they can understand that. But just generally, what tips would you give, whether you're in that environment? Because it's easy to be like, oh, that, let the business guys do that, and
right,
fall
right.
on what's natural to you, even if like you get that. How important really is that?
So I think that's really a good observation. In the 20th century, this is the way I look at it. I grew up in the 20th century in the 70s and 80s and started working in the 90s, actually in the mid-80s. And, you know, it felt like it was a different world for the engineer. It was more about solving the problem that the business people figured out. Now in the 21st century, there's so much disruption going on that the engineers really need to be on the forefront, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Spotify is a great example. Viacom is a great example. There's a lot going on in the media industry. Huffington Post is also a great example. A lot going on in the news industry. A lot of disruption, a lot of new technology. So engineers really need to be out in the forefront alongside of business people, and we need to understand the whole picture because we can't really predict where things are going to go, what tomorrow is going to look like. It's funny, you know, when the iPhone came out, I certainly didn't predict a billion apps. I didn't predict streaming services. I didn't predict how much impact it was going to have. And one of the things I do is I take the train every day from New Jersey into Manhattan. I've been doing it for 17 years. And in the year 2000, when I started, everybody's reading newspapers. I've not seen a single newspaper in the last couple of years. Now everybody's watching video on their phone.
Right.
And so that's like a little barometer of change to mm-hmm. me. Like I can tell you, you know what's going to be big? Video on the phone. Going to be big. And the thing is that as engineers, what's great about what we can do is we have all these services, cloud services, machine learning services, mobile services. And so we can work hand in glove with the business people to come up with new products, new ideas. You don't need to go out to innovation company and have them come in and pitch you about innovation. You can go to your engineers. And I think more and more companies are becoming like Viacom, becoming like Spotify, and realizing that this is the way we need to work. And if you find yourself in a situation where it's more old school, where you get requirements, right? It's all figured out for you,
right?
And your job is to implement the requirements. I think that might be a great opportunity for you to say, hey, I want to get together with some business people and we're going to do a hackathon.
Right.
We're going to do some prototypes. Like we just did a Nickelodeon hackathon a couple weeks ago and it was a blast. And we had producers and designers and product managers and business people with engineers. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the ideas from that hackathon, I got to be a judge on it, are going to actually find their way into production and become cool new things for kids all across America because the engineers understand the deep technical detail. And if they also understand the business problem, we can put something out there that, you know, you wouldn't even guess was possible.
Right. Great. Well, this has been extremely valuable. Greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you.
So that's a wrap. And thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd love to hear from you. So please comment below on what tips you found helpful to you and any other tips that have helped you as a product leader. I also ask if you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe to my podcast and share it with your friends or peers. I will be adding a lot of value that you don't want to miss out on. On our next show, I want to take a look at a lot of the themes discussed around management from this series and dive deeper into the themes around EQ and self-awareness that both John and Seth kept touching upon. In our next show, we host a very notable speaker in the product management space with a live interview from Kate Leto, the former head of product at Moo and product leader at Yahoo. Kate has been featured discussing many exciting topics around the product space, but we will be doing a deeper dive around emotional intelligence and product EQ. So keep listening. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.